Good evening and welcome to the Better Clubhouse on this Tuesday, March 25th, last Tuesday of March, as we look forward to April, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios, brought to you, as we are each and every week, from Ice Pick Vodka, Shipyard Brewing, Sea Dogs Brewing, serving breakfast daily, Michelob Ultra, Michelob Ultra Zero. This is the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, and you're listening to the Better Clubhouse live on RadioSt.Pete.com on the Florida Sports Dreams channel. Check us out on Spotify, last week's episode. Tell us what we did. Tell us what we got right, what we got wrong, as we look forward to March Madness and all the golf, and you can do that each and every week as well. Usually gets up there about Wednesday, so if you need to step away from this one here and you want to put on some lightning or look forward ahead that you got to do a honey-do list before we get back into March, just go on Spotify, Tampa Bay Podcast Archive, part of Radio St. Pete. Catch all our episodes there and also anything you missed from tonight's episode. I'm Christian Champ Sharp, part of the Clubhouse crew, joined on the other line as he is each and every week. It's my brother from another mother, Sammy Sharps. How are we doing on this last Tuesday? Have you fully recovered from March Madness and the 4 days of madness that we've had last week?
Hey, Champ. Thanks for having me. It's kind of bittersweet. You look forward to it all year, and then it kind of just speeds by, especially those first 2 days. And then the second 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, you've got those standalone games during the day, and it kind of just goes at a snail's pace. But I am somewhat recovered, looking forward to this weekend, looking forward to the Houston Open and the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was just talking to Joe on Saturday's show. I'm like, man, where are all these games on Saturday? I'm expecting four games at once. And Joe's like, you degen. Like, what are you doing here? Just one game is enough. Let's focus on a 20-point blowout 5 minutes into a game. Thanks, McNeese State, for that Cinderella one-game story. I'm really glad the sports assistant got his nil deal, got his boom box, got his name out there. Congrats, Joe. I could see you next year right there with him. Right on the sidelines, as you are on this show, doing the controls there. But, yeah, looking forward to it. Obviously, March Madness still in effect. Florida Swing is behind us. We're moving on to the Texas two-step. Two tournaments this week and next, and then we head down to Magnolia Lane. We got April 10th on the mind there. Hello, friends. Jim Nance, we're talking from Augusta National and Butler Cabin. Looking forward to that as well. As we do each and every week, we'll be talking about the PGA Tour, March Madness. Sammy's got, you should have seen the notes that this guy's got, Joe, there. It makes Mike's notes go to shame here. This guy's got pages and pages of the Sweet 16 breaking out there. Anything you miss here, there, anywhere, go to the Better Clubhouse, B-E-T-T-O-R, betterclubhouse.substack.com. Subscribe to our free newsletter. We sent one out on Monday, looking forward back at Valspar and Victor Hoblin over Justin Thomas there. And then we're looking ahead, obviously, to the Texas Children's Houston Open. We got Scottie Scheffler and Roy McIlroy heading the field there. And obviously, we got Sweet 16 matchups starting back on Thursday, playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Fortunately, by the end of this weekend, we're going to be down to, what, four teams. We're going to be down right after, and it's only going to be a short step away, and we're going to be all done with basketball as well. So betterclubhouse.substack.com, Monday, Wednesday newsletters. Follow us on all our socials, X, Instagram, there as well. Follow myself on Twitter, champs311. Follow Sammy at SammyAVBets over there as well. So I think as we look back, let's take a quick glimpse. So 30 minutes, we'll take this to the bottom of the hour. 7:30, we'll play a little golf here, talk about a little Valspar and Texas and the Houston Open. Then we're going to flip over to the dance floor of the clubhouse there, and then we'll talk March Madness. Sammy's got the full breakdown of all eight games there. So first, let's take a step back to our hometown event, Valspar. I had the privilege, thank you to Mike Rickard, the GOAT himself, who's listening, I know he is, each and every week on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, hooked us up with a pass to the Valspar. Sorry, Joe, you missed that flight over there to that Uber you were taking over and dishing people around and catching March Madness. What I saw was madness on the golf course. I saw some rain. I saw some wind. I saw some F-bombs. I saw some clove throws. I saw plenty of action on Thursday. One of the best stories that I've been telling on this great network is as I'm going into the trying to get my media credentials, I walk up to the security guard, go right through the players' parking lot. He's like, yeah, first door on the right. I say, okay, you got it. Walk through the door. I open that door wide up. I see that security guard. And who do I see sitting at a table just to the right over her right shoulder? None other than Michael Kim, Who's he sitting with? That would be Will Zalatoris and Saeed Tagala. I'm like, I think I'm at the wrong place, but I played it normal. I played it cool up in my on the tee Florida golf gear. Listen to that great show every Thursday down here at Ferg's as well. And I said, I'm looking for the meteor. And she's like, yeah, that's going to be the next one. Nice as can be. Great hospitality there. But only thing I'll say from there, Sammy, is if you act like you've been there, everybody believes it. Everybody sees it. Composure is key. But I'm not sure the composure of some of the players dealing with that wind. Obviously, the tomahawk from Saeed Tagala. But what are your thoughts there as the week? One of probably the toughest course. I know you're not a fan of Birdie Fest, so I don't know how much golf you might have seen, but from a casual March Madness guy, from a casual golf perspective, a diehard March Madness guy, switch it, flip it, do all that good stuff that Willy Wonka would tell me to do. What are your thoughts at the Valspar as you were kind of focused on March Madness there?
Sure. Strictly from a more casual perspective, I know you and I have been doing things like one and done and talking golf matchups and golf outrights for a few years now. And seemingly I kind of disappear every March and I kind of just focus on March Madness. And I've definitely been deeper in golf this time of year than I ever have been. And I will say it helps that you had two guys that, you know, more casual golf fans would cheer for in Justin Thomas and Victor Hovland fighting for a win at the top of the leaderboard, coming down the stretch on Sunday when you've got Duke blowing out Baylor. I think that was great for the PGA. I think it made for a little bit of good TV there. But prior to that, I honestly didn't watch much golf over the weekend. It was kind of interesting. Xander seemed to play really well. He had a bad stretch there in one of the rounds. And then Tom Kim, he was under 70 twice and then over 70, he was 74 twice. So kind of a roller coaster of a weekend, a roller coaster of an event, and that's kind of what you look for. You look for the courses and the tournaments that are going to test these guys, and I think we've got another one coming up this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back at Valspar, obviously, with only, I think on Thursday, obviously, we had the rain. We thought that huge tee time draw, right? We thought the early morning. Luckily for me, I did have two of the five first-round leaders. Shout-out to me. I did, unfortunately, jinx Killer Keith Mitchell up there. I stroll onto the grounds. He's 6-under par through 14, playing the back nine first. So he already got through the snake pit looking good. He's got a par four. He's got a par five, a par four, and then a par four to close. Unfortunately, pars the par five, and then three putts down the stretch, two three putts to close. So he lost the first round lead there, 6-under par. Five guys tied minus 4-under. It's a fun sweat. It's definitely, it's not enjoyable. I mean, it's enjoyable to watch the players, but I know most sports fans will, if you're sweating your home team or your final four or some of these bets, it's probably best not to see a guy watch it up front and just sweat and do all that. I was definitely pacing within the Copperheads booth. Shout out to Rondé Barber and Keith Robinson putting on a great show up there at the Copperheads there. But yeah, I don't think a lot of known names. I was sweating a guy by the name of Kevin Velo. If you're telling Kevin Velo, you're going down to like seventh on the depth chart there. You're really digging deep being like, this guy, I'm going to have to take a lap, as I like to say, if I lose a bet there. But tough course, obviously snake pit. One thing that I saw there was Justin Thomas played the snake pit one over for the week. Victor Hovland, the eventual champion, finished at 2-under for the week. And that was really the difference. Those three holes play such a pivotal tournament there. Victor Hovland is the same Victor Hovland that finished shot at 80 the week prior at the Players' Championship. So, I mean, 80-1 last week. Congrats if you had him there. Just back in the ceiling of Victor there. Most famous saying, Joe Geiger, for Victor Hovland is, stay off the weed, is as we do for Victor there. Justin Thomas obviously had that great Friday round to bounce back with Jordan Spieth playing with him. And then also on Saturday had that great run as we watch it live from Ferg's on that back nine. Yeah, everybody thought he had it. I think he even reached a money line, Sammy, of a minus 2,000 for JT. Everybody thought. I know you were getting my DMs there, Sammy, saying, man, I wish we had bet JT. And what does Victor do? He goes and birdies two of the three of the snake pit to take it from him as well. So a great tournament as it is each and every week. I can't say thank you enough to Valspar. Great tournament. I always recommend going to it. Unfortunately, we didn't hit a winner, but hey, a couple first round leader bets. And Sammy, how'd that top 20? Did the train end up stopping, or are we still riding strong?
The train ended up stopping just for this week. Xander made it in the top 20, but Tom Kim had, I think, two bogeys that were costly in the last round. And I think he finished one or two strokes off the top 20, but it was a sweat for the whole weekend, and that's all you can ask for. We'll hope to start a new streak this week.
Yeah, love that. T36 there, and obviously going two over the last three holes. If he birdies any one of the goes par he shoots, he's one off at T22. If he birdies one of them, he takes the T20 there. So still like the top 20. We'll have to stick around for Sammy's top 20 bets. That's only the first time in the last 4 weeks that Sammy's been off. So as we fast forward, Sammy, let's take a step outside of the clubhouse and go on to the patio preview, as we like to call it. And this week it is presented by SETI Power. Have to keep that SETI going, SETI.com. Keep that energy high for you, Sammy, as we continue to power through March. SETI Power, they got great battery carts. Hit up SETI.com to get all your information on the SETI carts there. But, Sammy, give us a statistical preview of what the boys are facing now we've moved over out of Florida into Texas on the first step at the Texas Children Houston Open.
Sure. We're going to be at Memorial Park Golf Club, a golf course here in Houston. It's a par 70, and it's nearly 7,500 yards. I'm not sure it's going to play like that for every round based on pin locations and things of that nature. But, yeah, it's an interesting course in that it's one of the two or three longest courses on PGA Tour. Usually Bermuda greens, when this used to play in the fall swing, it was Bermuda greens, but at this time of year, it's going to be the Poa Trivalis Overseed, roughly 7,000 square yards on the greens, which is about pretty big PGA Tour average. Last year was the first year that they moved it back to the spring, a couple weeks before the Masters, and they kind of augustified this course, if you will, around the green. The rough is shaved down. There's runoff. There's not a lot of bunkers around the greens. The defense is the green undulations and the slope-offs around the green. It's a driver-heavy course. The fairways are pretty wide open, greater than 76% of the driver usage compared to PGA Tour, which is around 67%. And players took driver nearly 83% of the time last year. So driver's going to be pretty important this year. There are five par threes. They range in difficulty and length. Some of them are 215 plus. Some of them are under 190. There's an interesting dichotomy of par fours. Two of the hardest holes on the course are 520 yard plus par fours with bogey rates around 30%. And then, kind of like every week we've been saying lately, there's a handful of par threes. There's three on this course. They're among the three or four easiest holes on the course, and you've got to score on them to have a shot to host the trophy here in Houston.
Yeah, I think for me, when I think of Memorial Park, I think of it's a muni there, Joe. You can get your clubs, go out to a public golf course there. But when you think of munis and you think of public, obviously I think that the majority of the fan would think Birdie Fest, right? But I think what we've seen in the last four tournaments here, our first times it's played here, yes, that's only four times. So if you're looking at Houston Open and you're looking at former course history and that sort of thing, and that's been played at the Golf Club of Houston and that sort of thing. So only at Memorial Park the last 4 years. But this is not a easy test for these players. I think it's actually one of the best tests before these guys probably take off next week at a TPC San Antonio and start. They'd use this as their prep for Augusta National. So I'm looking for a winning score right around that 12, 13 under par. And Sammy, what are some key metrics? Is this a, hey, we're going to hit the approaches and then the greens are going to kind of let, or is this more just bomb and gouge? And what are the key stats are saying that the leader at the top on Sunday, what are they going to have to rank high in order to have a high finish here?
So sure, approach is usually a fixated stat when you're modeling or you're just looking at the way golfers are playing and how they're in form. But this week it's not as critical to success as some other tournaments. Short game is huge here. Putting on the greens, around the greens is huge. Scrambling and saving your score is huge here. And then driving distance, carry distance. If it's going to rain and be windy, you're going to want guys that can carry the ball. So shots gained off the tee. And I did like your call with long irons. I think depending, that just depends upon, you know, how long these guys are off the tee, like Rory, you know, versus Nick Taylor. There's going to be a difference there of which irons they're taking. So I did filter in the newsletter you'll catch tomorrow if you're subscribed to the Substack. I did filter for long and very long courses based on, you know, shots gained, tee to green, good drives gained, things of that nature. So you can kind of focus on the guys who do very well on courses that are long and demand a good off the tee game.
So before Sammy gets into his picks, I want to let everybody know, based on those stats, we'll have to catch it right after this. Stay tuned to see who the names that pops in his model and along with my own. Before we do that, you've been listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, and you're listening to the Better Clubhouse live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, 13th and Central, right in the backdrop of the old gray lady with her top off, Tropicana Field, in downtown St. Pete, streaming live on RadioSt.Pete.com and the Florida Sports Dreams channel. Come on down. Plenty of TVs. We got the Lightning versus the old pesky Penguins on all the TVs right now. Obviously getting ready for all the action in the spring training. Last spring break, it was popping down here. Definitely don't head to the beach. Minus EV move for Champ and the girls there. But come on down. 85 degrees. My car was up to 106. But coming on down, I'm sipping on a nice cool Champa Bay here as they do each and every Tuesday. Come on down. $3 tacos. Get yourself a rodeo burger. Got to throw those onion straws on there as well. Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, each and 13th and Central. There. We're just talking on the phone right now outside on the patio. Got our feet kicked up, enjoying the sunset down here at St. Pete with Sammy Sharps on the phone now. Just gave us a breakdown, said got a little driver-heavy course, long irons, strong on the short game, strong on the putting. Also Memorial Park there, Sammy, just looked at last year's leaderboard. 64 led after day one. Highest score was a 78. 62 by Tony Finau, day two, highest score in 82. So I think what we're still seeing, and same thing I saw 63 in round three, 64 low. I actually think this is closer to the TPC Sawgrass, where the likes of Victor Hovland shooting an 80, where the first round leader was a 65, 64. I still see those high scores. This is going to be a tough course that I think, yes, there are scores to make. Birdies to be had, eagles to be had, especially on those five par fives that you mentioned, but also keep an eye out on the big numbers. So running your stats through the model, who are some names that the patrons can look for on the first page of the leaderboard?
Sure. Before I throw out the names, I just wanted to quantify what I said before the break there. Putting in around the green, both top seven on out of 52 courses in the PGA Tour rotation, shots gained total in the top eight, and then tee to green and off the tee are both top 15 out of 52. So you can see where the importance is there. Keeping that in mind, a couple of names I led to. In terms of an outright, I think I might bet Scotty 4-1 this week and call it a day with the outrights. Usually I bet about 2 to 3 units in the outright market as of late, and I think I might just invest it all there. I know that's kind of a boring answer. He hasn't really been himself lately, but he's still top 20, top 25, got a bunch of top 10s, and he typically plays pretty well here. He's a Texas guy. But moving past him, I haven't really made a decision on the outright board yet. Maybe you have. Do you want to talk about that for a second while I pull up my top 20 notes?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Obviously, as we look at the odds board right now, Scottie Scheffler 4-1, as Sammy mentioned there. Rory McIlroy 7-1. This is a very two-man versus the field there. Sammy, we'll have to get an odds line on that to see if we're going to take the field or we're going to take those two guys there. But a big jump up, and then Aaron Rye, 20s to 1. Tony Finau right up there. Those are the only four names under 30-1. 30-1 bigger on Davis Thompson, Jason Day, Minwoo Lee, and then the guy who lost to Rory McIlroy in that playoff on Monday on St. Patrick's Day, J.J. Spahn, Wyndham Hotels Clark, round out those only 40 and below. Yeah, you're going to see, subscribe to the newsletter. I'm going to drop in my top 10 right now after I ran my model. that lined up there. My top 10 for this week, without further ado there, a name that shouldn't come to a surprise. This guy's been balling all season. This guy's a stats god. That's none other than Alex Smalley up there in number one spot for me. Nikolai Høyregaard played well for 18 holes and then kind of let it do. That's why I'd only bet him first-round leader last week instead of the full. Killer Keith Mitchell again, first-round leader, but something about Valspar in the lead for that guy. Then he just exits and goes back out the back door there. Next on my list is a guy you just mentioned, Scottie Scheffler. First time in my top 10 this year for Scottie Scheffler. That's how bad, and now I say bad, but the guy's par three is a concern. 156 on tour right now with five par threes, but Scottie Scheffler, can't go wrong there. Kevin the Goat Roy, JJ Spahn, Joel Damon, Ryan Gerard, and Jake Knapp I really like this week as well, and Ben Griffin round out my top 10. Here at Memorial Park, I've had two winners in the top last 4 years, and the model really needs to heat up. I mean, we're only talking two winners this far in the year. Last year, I was cooking, but I really like the Scotty lean. I'm either going to go one and done there or try to parlay him. Maybe we can find some Sweet 16 odds on that front as well. So there's a couple guys that I got in mind. Throw out some names, and let's see if we can circle one together, maybe a little bit deeper down the line.
Sure. I you know, the top 10 might be not running hot right now, but the top 10 is infamous for going on 2, 3, 4 out of 5 type runs. And when it heats up, it heats up. So when we get that first one, you know, it's going to start like wildfire. But adding to your list, I have a couple names that you actually didn't mention. First, Siwoo Kim. He's a Texas guy. He resides in the Dallas area. He was top 17 here last year, and his only real losses were on the green in two of the four rounds, and off the tee slightly in round three. Everything else was near even or better, big gains in all facets. And he's rates out pretty well in my model. He's sixth coming in here around the green, and he's eighth in his stat that I've been using lately, going for the greens, birdie or better percentage. So you're considering playing further back. These guys are going to be going for greens as much as possible. So he's top 10 in that metric. Another name that I like that I think I'm going to end up parlaying him with, top 20-wise, is Minwoo Lee. I don't like that he doesn't have history here. He hasn't really been good around the greens at Augusta, which is what I looked at for people with sparse course history here. But he has gained around the green 4 of the last 6, and he's gaining really well with the putter 6 of the last 7. So I think those two, combine those two for a top 20 around 5 to 1 plus 550 range. I think that stands out to me. And then Highsmith, big old bucket hat Highsmith. Maybe it's even big, maybe a pail hat bucket. I don't know. That thing's massive. But he's been playing pretty well lately. Top 21 here last year, gained pretty much in all rounds off the tee approach and tee to green. Inconsistent around the green and with the putter, but he has gained in 5 straight on the greens and in 3 of the last 4 around the greens. He got past his hangover after his win earlier this season. He's got Kim top 22, top 20 the last 2 starts. So I think I'm going to fire up Highsmith at plus 220 range for another top 20 bet there.
Yeah, I think Siwoo makes a lot of sense in Texas, especially next week at San Antonio. Great short game player. Only question is the putter, and actually ranking in the top 125 this season in putter. The only thing that drew me away from Siwoo on this course is you did mention the length. He is 149th in driving distance, but I think we've seen guys not with the greatest driving. See Aaron Rye, who I really like this week as well. I think that's a great comp to Siwoo Kim, and probably even at a better price than Siwoo Kim. But I really like the Siwoo Kim mention. With Minwoo Lee that you mentioned there, with not the really the importance on approach, because he has struggled this year over outside of the top 150 and approach strokes good to the green for Minwoo Lee. But what does he do really well? Short game and putter. Exactly right on that. Makes plenty of birdies. Top 100 in the par threes and par five. He's top 50 this season. Also top 10 in driving distance. So I love this for a Minwoo week as well there. And then you also mentioned the bucket hat himself. I think Joe Highsmith, we got to, if you look back at his form, you might say, man, what happened to this guy? What happened is he got his first ever PGA Tour victory. Let's give the guy a slide. If you're going to, after he wins at the Cognizant Honda Classic there, if he goes to the Players, anytime he loses to the Players, that course is diabolic, miscut or not, as we saw with Victor Hovland there. So love those picks there as well. Can't go wrong. A name I'll throw into the mix, and I'm curious your perspective on that one as well, is a guy who actually finished top 10, and I think he's really been trending for the type of player I expect this guy to be. This guy won on a TPC driver course just last year that I know you were on, Sammy, as well, and that'd be none other than Mr. Davis Thompson. What are your thoughts? I see nothing but green off the tee, gaining mad after that. Approach game good. The only question is the putter, which is a little concern this week. But what are your initial thoughts on Davis Thompson?
I looked at Davis Thompson. His last start. It was his first significant gain with the putter since Sedgefield in August. So he had been hemorrhaging on the greens, but his gaining on approach in four starts in a row around the green, he's lost in two of the last three, but he's gained in six of the last eight. So he's had two kind of zero or worse performances around the green in his last three starts. But before that, he's been pretty good. I kind of give him a pass for those two up and down performances. I like the short game. I didn't get there yet. I haven't been convinced of it. He was a top 21 here last year. He was tied with a couple other people. He hasn't been top 10 since last start, since the Shriners, when he was top five. So he hasn't really felt the heat down the course of the final round of the tournament, which concerns me a little bit. In terms of an outright bet, you have to assume that Scotty and or Rory is potentially going to be there to fight people off in the final round. And I think kind of with the up and down game as of late leading into his last start, I'm kind of concerned about him. But he is on my list to look into deeper for an outright bet if I want to go down that road.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think of Davis Thompson, I think of similar to Victor Hovland actually last week. I think of ceiling. Only a lot of these guys, obviously, when I look at the odds board for Davis Thompson, he's only fifth in line there. I really like Aaron Rye. I do like the game. Tony Finau's played this course really, really well. And Jason Day's obviously had a great run. You picked Minwoo Lee up there at the top as well. Even J.J. Spaun and what he did at the Players, let's not forget. J.J. Spaun's actually won next week's tournament. It was his initial win at the TPC San Antonio. So if you want to get a week ahead on J.J., the guy likes Texas there. Subscribe to the newsletter. The Better Clubhouse at Substack.com. We're going to have plenty of bets on there. I obviously got to keep writing the first round leader bets. I got to see who names pop there. Subscribe to that newsletter. Sammy does diligent work there to make sure it gets out right as you get home on Wednesday and about to strap in for Sweet 16 and get your bets in. We get a little bit of extra time here, Sammy, going to Central Time instead of that 6:30 East Coast time. But really looking forward to it. Sammy, before we close the golf segment, obviously I have to mention congrats, hat tip, golf clap on your Tommy Fleetwood pick there for the one-and-done contest.
Thank you.
Finishing there well ahead of my Happy Gilmore's caddy, as he had on his bib last week, and that would be Mr. Will Zalatoris. Unfortunately, he lost his game. It looked like he got hit by the car. By the jackass that was driving it there. Unfortunately, couldn't finish on Saturday or Sunday to bleed away some dollars there. But I still got about a 400K lead on you. But I'll let you go first. Guest honors. Who's the name that you're taking? And so what we do with our one-and-done segment, forget the odds. You got one player. You can only use them one time a year. Who? And then you have to select it. We take the salary. And then me and Sammy got a side bet on the side so you can rack them up. So he's picked first week. He picked Justin Thomas. Second week, he picked Tommy Fleetwood. Who are you going on the third week here, Sammy?
I'm going to go Michael Kim because he's playing to get into the Masters still. I think he gets in with the top 20 here. And I don't love that he's played, you know, seven weeks in a row. But I think fighting for that top 20 spot, I think with the way he's playing, it's going to give him a solid floor. So I'm going to go Michael Kim.
All right, Michael Kim, solid pick. I hope I didn't spook him as I went in the Players Lounge. Definitely saw some eyeballs. I thought about hitting him up on X. I'm not going to lie. He does get a quick Q&A. I'm like, I didn't scare you on Thursday, but I didn't want to out myself. I didn't want to hurt Mike, the legends there of hurting us there. You know what I'm going to do, Sammy? I'm going to put this in your face. I'm going to rub it in your nose. Davis Thompson is my first, is going to be okay. My one and done week there.
I like it.
Probably not, maybe not somebody I bet, but definitely want exposure to Mr. Davis Thompson there. Big mitts, as we call him in there. This guy's got massive hands, Joe, that wraps around the club there. So any final, Sammy, where can people find the rest of your golf picks if they're not going to subscribe to the newsletter? At least hit you up on X. Where can they find you there?
Yeah, hit me up on X at Sammy F. Betts, or follow me on the Action Network app where I log all of my bets.
There you go. And you're going to want to follow right now. Click that subscribe. Click that follow because we're about to hit the March Madness there. But before we get there, I want to let everybody know that this is the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, and you're listening to the Better Clubhouse live on live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. Clubhouse Studios down here, 13th and Central, right in the backdrop, Tropicana Field. Also listening to us live on RadioSaintPete.com, Florida Sports Streams channel. We'll be here until the top of the hour there. We got 30 more minutes. If you like this show, we break down this one. You might have caught some F-bombs on me on Saturday's show. I got a little fired up as we discussed golf, and I think we discussed trading cards. We discussed some Robux. We started MLB. We even got some pickleball action there. We got plenty of puppies. And, Sammy, I just want to let you know, everybody loves women's sports, and everybody watches women's sports there as well. But we got a great list of shows 5 days a week. I think we're up to now. Mondays with Big Monday. Tuesdays with the Better Clubhouse. Wednesday, you take your breath. Thursday, we got OnTheTeeFloridaGolf.com. Friday, we got Bump That Media. And Saturday, we got the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection as well. All of your great shows on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. Follow us on our socials. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on X, Facebook, and all that great stuff. Catch all our episodes each and every week. Kevin, you round the town action on Tampa St. Pete and also filling out athletics, high schools. You want it, you name it. If there's something we're missing, throw it in the comments, and happy to take a look at that as well. Sammy, you ready to head back to the clubhouse dance floor this week as we're sponsored this week proudly by Sea Dog Brewing Company, Shipyard Brewing Company, serving breakfast daily, and the Chi-Chi Rodriguez Golf Club Academy. Ran into, actually, Sammy, Fred Forestley on Saturday. He was over here with his England buddies. Number one craft beer sold in UK. That'd be none other than the Sea Dog Brewing, Shipyard Brewing there. Sammy, you got to come on down to St. Pete. Got to head over to Sea Dogs there. Check out the new radio booth that we'll be hopefully in either this week or next, Joe. Looking forward to that one. Got to get those main blueberries and check out that Blue Paw action. Blue Paw number one, obviously, for me on the Shipyard. And also shout out to Ace High Printing. Ace High Printing, Joe. Got your nice name on a nice business card there. Be looking and forward to having that, passing that around, getting this great show out. Tell a friend. Come on down. Have a beer with Champ in Champa Bay. Sammy, you ready to hit on the dance floor and talk some March Madness? I heard we might got only 8 games left in the season. Try not to be sad. Let's get pumped up as we break down the Sweet 16.
Woo-woo! I'm ready.
Why don't you lead us off there, buddy?
Sure. So it was an interesting first few days of the tournament, that's for sure. Everybody loves a Cinderella story in March Madness, and that really wasn't a thing this year past the first round with McNeese and Drake. But as somebody that watched the season pretty much religiously throughout every single night, I can't say that I'm genuinely surprised with the way that college sports is set up right now, the transfer portal and the NIL. I think that the rich are just going to keep getting richer, and eventually the power conferences, namely the Big Ten and the SEC, are going to probably be playing a different game. I think even though we didn't have many upsets, I think we're still in line for a great Sweet 16 and beyond. The college basketball landscape this year is very top heavy, so I think that makes for some exciting matchups later in the tournament rather than earlier in the tournament. Interestingly, not a single team that was favored by 8 or more lost a game in the first two rounds. And per Action Network, favorites of 6 or more are 26-2 straight up, 19-9 against the spread this year, pushing the total over the last 2 years to 51-6 straight up, and 38-19 against the spread. So if you're a six-point favorite or more, which we do have a few of them this coming round, it's a pretty good omen. So we'll get into that a little bit. No 11s or higher in the Sweet 16 for the first time in nearly 20 years. We do have a 10 seed with Arkansas. And then per Action Network, again, they released a pretty excellent betting primer today that I got a few of these trends from. 28-13 against the spread. SEC is as an underdog against non-conference opponents. So that foreshadows a little bit of Ole Miss versus Michigan State, which, spoiler alert, I did bet plus 3.5 already. I do like the Rebels there. What did you notice? I don't know how much you watched with the Valspar going on. I know you're at the Valspar. What did you catch? What did you see? What did you think from another perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird, right? I mean, I think I'm obviously a diehard golf guy. If you come over and we have a Super Bowl party, I'm probably going to have the Waste Management Phoenix Open on instead of the Super Bowl until it finishes. That's just me for golf. Diehard there. Obviously, Thursday caught some late round action. I think I didn't see many intriguing games. I didn't see much close action. Obviously, the Maryland buzzer beater travel not there was also fun. Good to see. I think one of the best games was the UConn-Florida game. Sorry, Joe, for the Gators kind of escaping by there to Sammy's chagrin there. Happy to see that. But, I mean, overall, I think it was fun. You could put any teams playing in March Madness. The biggest takeaway for me was the boombox from McNeese State. The guy getting a live deal, having the fun times, seeing that the kid, I don't know who it was, but somebody's baby, player's baby on the sidelines, and it was his last game. One of the best moments I saw was the referee acting like there was a spill on the court to stop play so a sub could get in for his last game there as well. Seeing two brothers score in Rhode Island, I believe it was, that there was their hometown coming in and get some points. Those were the moments I saw there. Obviously, I love to see Duke advancing. I love to see Kentucky advancing. I'd love to tell people that Texas Tech could actually do something. So that was fun to see as well. Another takeaway that you mentioned to me, Sammy, that I'm intrigued to see your thoughts as well, is before the tournament, you said since 1985, every single team has reached at least the conference semifinal of their tournament. And right now I got 12 out of 16 teams in that same moniker right now. And I'm still trying to track down this last team. But right now, so who checks that bill right now? Auburn, Texas Tech, Florida, Houston, BYU, Bama, Arizona, Duke, Maryland, Michigan, Tennessee, and Michigan State. So I got, you can cross off Ole Miss, you can cross off Arkansas. It hurts me to say, but you can cross off Kentucky. And there's one more team that I'm missing that doesn't fit the bill there.
I'll have to dig into that.
Yeah, so that's another stat, but I think there. So that's my key thoughts. But as we look forward to the Sweet 16, who are your thoughts? Just as we break down, let's look forward there to your stats there, Sammy, and just breaking down a game. And let's start. Let's pick one, and let's just knock them out.
Yeah, I guess I best start with the first game of the weekend, which is Bama versus BYU, right? People project this to be a pretty high-scoring game. These teams love to score and run up and down the floor. And I found something that's interesting. These are both very heavy rim and three offenses. That's the most efficient way to score nowadays. That leads to the highest-rated adjusted offensive efficiency. Interestingly, Bama is more rim-heavy than BYU, and BYU is more three-heavy than Bama. But we know Bama as the one that lives and dies by the three. So that's an interesting little tidbit there. But BYU is very strong in its rim denial. Its defense overall leaves a bit to be desired, but they're very strong at limiting action at the rim, and that will play well against Bama, who likes to dribble off the bounce, likes to feed it into Big Cliff. I think that's going to play pretty well for BYU. Meanwhile, Bama has been strong defensively on the perimeter. They're in the 91st percentile in corner three rate and 71st percentile in above the break threes, which is top of the key. That's the two most common areas that BYU shoots from. So a long way to say, it's going to be a hold your nose and plug your nose and maybe don't watch in the second half, but I actually think I'm leaning to the under. This game opened around 174. It's steamed up to 176, and if it keeps going, I might just play one unit. Usually in the March Madness, I'm two or three units a play, but I might just go one unit on the under here based on the matchups there at the rim and on the perimeter. What do you think of that? Are you fit for an under in Alabama game?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, shout out to you for having BYU up there inside mm-hmm. of your Elite Eight. Shout out to Sammy mm-hmm. here to see. Sammy, how do you like this nickname first that Joe gave BYU on Saturday? The Stormin' Mormons. How do you like that name?
Yeah, the Stormin' Mormons. Love it. Love that.
So I think, obviously, if you the square is going to be out there. Oh, Bama, BYU, points. I really like a website you're pointing out to the Action Network. I really like Haslametrics.com out there as well. They're projecting this around 171. If they want to keep boosting that up, I love playing an under. Obviously, it's smelly. Obviously, you're not going to make many friends betting unders, but I love it to cash. So let's ride the unders there on BYU-Bama.
Perfect. I do want to say, too, that BYU, I'm sorry, Bama, one of their keys to victory is getting their opponents to nine or more turnovers, usually around 10 turnovers per game. And BYU does cough the ball up a lot. That they let Wisconsin back in the game because of that and some questionable calls. But the turnovers are concerning. BYU is going to be a popular underdog. At first glance, I gravitate towards BYU. Probably think Bama will advance, but in my bracket, I do have BYU, so I'm at least going to cheer for that. Let's get to Florida, Maryland. Like you said, Derek Queen, questionable, travel, no travel. Personally, with the way the game has been played the last 10, 20 years, I'm okay with that not being a travel. I also had some money line exposure in parlays to Maryland, so take that for what it's worth. But I would have been upset there if there would have been a travel there. I think you can argue that the ball wasn't secure in his hand as he's taking that first step. The next two steps were long and looked travel-ish, but I guess if it's called there, I would hate it, but I wouldn't say it's the wrong call. I'm fine with it being a no call. But interestingly enough, Maryland coming off a buzzer beater, teams do not typically fare well coming off buzzer beaters. They've only won in the last nine instances where a team has advanced and won to the next round after a buzzer beater. They've only won two of those nine. So the spread kind of is indicative of that, but the way I line this game based on the last five performance, it's pretty even. I will say a lot of the offense for Maryland flows through the backcourt there, or sorry, the front court there with Julian Reese and Derek Queen. And Florida has the guys. They've got the depth. They've got 2 7-footers, two other guys that are 6'10". Condon and Hauk are pretty versatile defensively. So Chinyelu's a great rim defender. So I think Queen and Reese are going to have a little bit of trouble in the paint. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the backcourt. Similarly, I think Florida's front court. I keep confusing that. I think the front court is going to struggle a little bit against the defense of Queen and Reese. So it's going to come down to the backcourt, and I give the edge to Florida in that aspect. I don't know that I'm running to lay the points with the Gators in this matchup, but I think they'll win outright. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think looking at that matchup, obviously the travel, I don't think if that's called a travel, people are upset. I think what we have is a March Madness shining moment there. Great. What are your thoughts on Queen and Flag being on the same high school team? How is that even fair? I don't know how that's possible. I think I'm glad not to play that card there. But obviously being from Baltimore, maybe he could teach Lamar Smith how to play in the playoffs. What do you think there, Sammy? But what I think there, I really like this Maryland team. Obviously, Florida just had a scare having to make that comeback against UConn to Joe's chagrin there with UConn looking like they might take over. I'd love to see Dan Hurley cry, take his sad self.
Yeah, what was that?
Take him into rehab.
What was
I don't,
that?
That's a he's too caught up in the moment that his program is too successful. If you listen to Dan Hurley, I tell him to take third prize and get it the heck out of here. I think that looking forward, I expect Florida to kind of show that number one, be there. I think it'll be a fun matchup. I think it'll be closer than people expect. I really like that 2 out of 9 on the buzzer beater. Sammy, did we look into that? Was that the next day a buzzer beater? Because I know overtime teams,
the next
NFL,
game.
The next. So is that without rest or with rest? Because you know I got to look further into that. It'll be looking at like they did that on Thursday and then did it Saturday, or we go round to round. We'll have to dig deeper into that and throw that in the
that
in the Substack for sure. Because if it's happening Thursday and then they had a game on Saturday. I also think that speaks into the better. Hey, man, did you see that buzzer beater? I'm going to bet that team again. I'm going to so I could definitely see from an angle there, and I would hate to pull the chair out from them. Joe, cover your ears on this one. Don't mute me. Florida Gators move on after the weekend there, and that. So we got the under in there. Maybe BYU playing a little scare there, and then we also have the Florida Gators moving on the first two. This is the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, and you're listening to the Better Clubhouse live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, 13th and Central Clubhouse Studios, listening live on RadioSt.Pete.com on the Florida Sports Dreams channel there, as we are each and every week, taking you to the bottom of the hour. We got 15 minutes of great action to cover. The Lightning just doing damage to the Pittsburgh Penguins right now at Ferg's. 4 goals. I think they scored 2 in like a minute there as well. Come on down to Ferg's. $3 tacos, as we are each and every. We got the karaoke set up. We got March Madness flowing. We got all sorts of action as we are each and every Tuesday down here. Check us out. Last 15 minutes, we're going to give a shout-out to Coca-Cola and Body Armor. Going to power us over the final one here. I got my Coca-Cola vanilla right in front of me there. Coca-Cola, Sammy, who you riding with? If you had a one-and-done in Coca-Cola product, what would it be?
The old school Coke vanilla.
Ah, he's going to go vanilla too. That was not scripted, ladies and gentlemen. That is teamwork.
No, it wasn't.
Inside of the clubhouse, it's all vanilla. Don't go orange vanilla. I don't know what we're doing there. Stick with the vanilla there.
Have you tried that?
I love orange. I'm an orange guy. Don't mix orange and blue, but I love orange, orange sickle. I go orange if we're going Celsius. I go orange, but I'm not going to go vanilla orange. No, I'll stick with it. And you should stick with this broadcast for the last 15 minutes. We got two big key name games, and also we got to break some down in the last 13 minutes here. Sammy, hit us with the next game that you're setting us up for.
Yeah, let's talk about Duke and Arizona. Your Dukies here. It's a rematch from a game in November, right before Thanksgiving. Duke went out to Arizona and dominated the Wildcats. They held Arizona to just 0.81 points per possession. The Wildcats were just 6 of 23 from the perimeter. Caleb Love was 1 of 9. Duke dominated the glass 43-30. Flag and Knipple, you know, they did most of their damage. 37 points combined there. The key factors here in this matchup, it's going to be obviously the three-point shooting for Arizona. One of the Evan Mia keys to victory for Arizona is making 34% of their threes in a game. And then one of Duke's keys to victory is holding opponents to under 35% in a game. So it's going to come down to, is Arizona hitting their threes? Are they not? After they torched the field in the last game, we'll see. They're a very inconsistent shooting team. I would wager on no. I think we're going to see much of the same. I know that line has ballooned up there. It's enticing to take, you know, plus nine and a half on Arizona. Maybe it gets to double digits, then I reconsider. But I'm at 9, maybe 8.5. I'm leaning Duke to take care of business. You know, I think Malwatch is great rim protector inside. He's probably the unsung hero of the team, keeping that defense anchored down on the back end. Duke can score really from anywhere, and Arizona's going to give up a ton of threes. The Blue Devils have been stroking it almost 40% in the last month from the distance. And Proctor, I think, is going to be the X factor offensively. He takes a lot of those above-key threes, and that's a soft spot of this Arizona defense. So I haven't bet it yet. I was considering maybe a money line. I actually looked at what the odds would be combining Duke, Florida, and Scottie Scheffler, and it, it's only like 8-1. I don't know if I want the extra liability. I think I'd rather just bet Scotty 4-1. I don't know what you think there, but I think I'm going to lay the points with Duke.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Caleb Love was on fire against Oregon there. I think I like the passion of that team. I also saw a lot of turnovers on both sides there from Arizona. Arizona's team actually reminds me of a lot of team that Caleb Love used to play for, and that'd be the UNC Tar Heels. They're a team that I thought was going to the Elite Eight. I hit 7 out of 8 in the Elite Eight so far. There, I think they're up and down, up and down. I think Duke's defense kind of takes the storm here. As you mentioned, Caleb Love struggling in that first matchup. I think that happens again until we start seeing Proctor miss threes. I mean, obviously, we're there. I mean, they just won 93-49, 89-66. Yes, it was against Mount St. Mary's. Yes, it was against Baylor. But this Duke team is historically good. As the only thing that would keep them down, I think, is Flagg's ankle, which he looked definitely sharp there. Loved the lobs back and forth. This Duke team is on a mission. I expect them to have a close game. I don't know if it's this one or the next one. I would lean actually the next game is probably going to be their closest game so far. But I see them shutting down Caleb Love. But I do love the intensity of them. I actually love Duke and Scotty. I love to see Duke still rolling. Definitely don't hedge your Duke bets right now by any means. This team is the highest point spread on the board. They will continue to be that way. There'll be plenty of spots. I don't see Duke this round. Maybe next round we'll keep an eye on them. Duke BYU would be a fun matchup, especially the Battle of the Blues. Might be a color game there. I also look forward to Duke at Alabama. I think that'd be a fun up and down matchup as well. Let's circle Duke in. Nothing to be concerned about here. Sammy, let's roll on to the next one there and the final matchup on Thursday, perhaps.
Sure. Actually, one more thing. Tommy Lloyd, yeah, Arizona's coach, just won 5-1 ATS at the NCAA tournament with time to prep. So he's not really the master game planner. Their best methodology is probably going to get Bradley and Lewis in the mid-range. I just don't see it happening. I've got this line more around 11, so I think I'm late with Duke. But, yeah, moving on to Texas Tech, Arkansas, real quickly. There's a few unknowns. We don't know if Chance McMillan's going to play. Texas Tech guard. He's pretty big for the scoring. They've slowed down the pace with him out. Another one to keep in mind, Adu Thiero. I think he's going to return for Arkansas. He practiced last week, but he did not play. This is going to be a pace war. Arkansas wants to get up and down the floor. Texas Tech's going to slow it down. Typically in the NCAA tournament, you want to bet on the slower paced teams in those type of games. The old adage is it's easier to slow a team down than speed a team up. I don't know. Texas Tech, I've got the Texas Tech to make the Final Four future. I know, you know, if they lose to Florida, it's going down anyway. I could see them going down in this game. I would probably lean to Arkansas and the points, Texas Tech to win. I feel that way, honestly, about a lot of these games. I know a lot of favorites covered. Again, I think that was because of the difference in the talent levels of some of these major and mid-major schools. And I don't know, in a game like this, Arkansas is not that far off talent-wise from Texas Tech. So
I agree with you. I think Texas Tech is probably going to be the closest game on paper. I don't think that's just a Bettino effect there. Or that's his Calipari playing for Arkansas,
Calipari,
right?
Yeah.
So I get the Bettinos. We got too many playing in the tournament there. But obviously, I think Calipari knows what he's doing. I think this is probably the closest matchup and actually be the most intriguing matchup. I don't know. I think defense there altogether. Stay away if you want to see pick there. But obviously, we're going to be backing Texas Tech to continue as we have future markets in that. Sammy, as we draw down the show here and look at Friday, what's probably the key game, and maybe that could determine the run to the Final Four here if you had to choose one of those four games in the Friday matchup?
So you're saying a Final Four run from one of these teams on Friday.
So we got Houston, Purdue, obviously big favorite Houston there. We got Auburn, Michigan. We got Tennessee, Kentucky, SEC there. I'm really hoping you're saying Kentucky will make a run. I'd love to see a Calipari run against his old team. That would be quite fun for me with a 40-1 back on Kentucky there. And then obviously last matchup, Michigan State, Ole Miss. Why is Ole Miss? We'll start with that team. Why should anybody care about Ole Miss against Michigan State?
So Chris Beard, he's one of my favorite coaches in the nation. He is very good in March with prep. 8-1 against the spread with 3+ days to prepare for an NCAA tournament game. So that's round of 64, Sweet 16, Final Four. He's 8-1 against the spread. He's won 12 games with 4 different programs in the NCAA tournament. That includes an upset over Matt Painter in Purdue when he was coaching Arkansas Little Rock back about almost 10 years ago. Ole Miss has the 3rd most Division I experience per KenPom in the country. And if you remember last week, we talked about experience, especially at the guard position in the NCAA tournament. Michigan State is lacking that. They've got Tom Izzo, January, February Izzo. Not going to knock Tom Izzo in any way. He's probably the best coach remaining by a decent margin. But Fears and Richardson were only 1 of 12 from the field combined. You know, I felt like New Mexico could have and maybe should have won that game. They didn't close it out well, but they had a chance right there. And they had Michigan State had to turn to Holloman and Atkins down the stretch there to get some offense. So it wasn't Fears and Richardson, and I don't know with the way that Ole Miss can heat up, maybe this is that game where Michigan State finally has opponent hit 40% of their threes against them. I worry about the youth in the backcourt for Michigan State more than anything. I could see a bevy of different outcomes in the Ole Miss-Michigan State game, but I love the way that the Rebels match up here. In that they can spread the floor and that they have experience in the backcourt.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at the last 7 games, their only losses are 2 to number 1 seeds. That would be the Florida Gators, yep. And that would be the Auburn Tigers. They just beat a team that I expected to make a huge run if they had their full team together, and that would be the Iowa State Cyclones. Obviously took care of North Carolina a couple in the round of 64 there. I think on paper not a lot of people are going to pick Ole Miss. I think that might be a sleeper if I were to look at this round here. I actually like them to sneak up there. And I actually like them to even put up a battle. SEC, obviously we know there. Auburn, they just played a 5-point game there, very, very close. And then what are they? Obviously they lost by 10 early in the season there. But it's hard to beat a team 3 times. I try to tell Sammy this, and it's Charles Barkley says it's hard too. I don't know that I'm going to guarantee it. But I would say Ole Miss is my team to kind of make that surprise run. What is a team that you would say is your surprise run? Is it the BYU, or are you taking somebody else there, Sammy?
Surprise run. I don't think you are going to like this, but I think of the teams remaining, the most surprising would be to see Rick Barnes go deep. So I think by default I would have to say Tennessee gets past Kentucky and gets past Houston would be the, like, maybe, I know they're a 2 seed, but I think given Rick Barnes' history, you could say that's a bit bold to get past Houston. So I would go there. I very much see Ole Miss versus Auburn in the next round. I think Auburn matches up really well with Michigan and Danny Wolf and Vlad Goldin. So I think with Broome and Cardwell, I think they can oppose the Michigan back or front court there. But yeah, I don't see outside Ole Miss, which you covered there. I don't see a surprise deep run. I guess it could be Arkansas. I mean, if Arkansas gets past Texas Tech and they get a shot at Florida, Cal's got some familiarity with Florida, as much as I hate to say that. Ole Miss and Arkansas, the only 2 teams to win as underdogs in the first 2 rounds. I think if either of those 2 teams continue that stretch, that would be pretty surprising through a more casual lens, for sure.
So, Sammy, what I really like right now, I just put it in. I really like this number. I can bet this number with Scottie Scheffler, and I really like that as well. That's Scottie Scheffler to win the Texas Children's Houston Open. Come on, sponsors, can we just get it easy? Valspar Championship.
Right?
Valspar Championship, Houston Open. Come on, people. Honda Classic. It's not that difficult. 2 syllables, 2 names. Scottie Scheffler and the Ole Miss to win. I got it 12-1 on Scottie Scheffler to win. I love that number there. Love that underdog. Jump on the patrons. You're going to see it in the Substack. That's going to be my number on Scottie Scheffler. That's what we're looking forward to, Ole Miss. And then looking forward to it. I mean, obviously, Sweet 16, only 8 games left there, Sammy. Where can people find you if they want to see all the rest of your bets? Obviously, they're going to subscribe to the Better Clubhouse at Substack.com. But if they want to hit you up on X, have any more questions as your in-depth analysis here, they want to see all your notes, where can they find you at?
Yeah, Sammy F. Betts on X, on Twitter. Again, I post all my plays on the Action Network app. I think for our newsletter tomorrow, I don't know if it'll do a separate one or what, but I can put some of these notes in the newsletter just so people have kind of an idea of how I'm looking at this matchup to matchup and what the numbers look like, maybe what I project the spreads to be. And I'll, the bets weren't that great in last week's newsletter, but I'll throw some bets in there, too, for the Sweet 16.
No, I think that's great. Obviously, they're probably good for my level of effort here in the Champa Bays. They probably got to turn this down to a 0.25 speed if they're trying to catch all the notes and all the high-flying action that I have. So throwing that into a newsletter is always great. You heard it there from Sammy. Catch us there. Follow us on X, the Better Clubhouse, Substack.com. Get that newsletter. Hit me up on X, Champs311. Tell me that who's your sleeper team for the Sweet 16, and tell us also who's your winner for the Texas Children's Houston Open as well. And as I say, as we do that, let's wrap it down with saying you've been listening to the Better Clubhouse, the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection broadcast live from the 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. For Sammy Sharps, Joe Geiger on the controls, RadioSaintPete.com's Joe Burdeau, and a special shout out to the legend, Iowa himself. That would be Mike Rickard listening to us down in downtown St. Pete as well. Thank you for listening to the Better Clubhouse. God bless you, and God bless America.